DW Africa Link.
The Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo remains a region scarred by relentless conflict, and now the spotlight turns to the escalating onslaught by M23 rebels and Rwandan forces. With lives uprooted, tensions soaring, and accusations flying, is this the next flashpoint in an already fragile region? Today, we dissect the players, the motives, and the human cost of a conflict that demands the world's attention. Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Rwanda-backed M23 rebels announced the capture of Goma, that's Eastern Congo's largest city, following a 48-hour deadline for the Congolese army to surrender. The situation has caused mass panic among Goma's 2 million residents, with gunfire reported throughout the city. The offensive threatens to worsen the conflict in North Kivu province, where a significant portion of the population is already displaced. The Congolese government declared the situation a declaration of war, in quotes, against them, while UN peacekeepers began processing surrenders from military personnel. The UN Security Council condemned the M23's advances and called for their withdrawal. Tensions escalated as Congo severed relations with Rwanda, which denies involvement despite allegations. Now, joining me for the discussion on this critical topic is Dr. Felix Ndahinda, Great Lakes researcher based in Netherlands, and Jonas Gedding, a DW freelance journalist based in Kinshasa. Many thanks for joining us. Maybe I'll start with you, Jonas. Can you just tell us the latest development in Goma with the rebels' claim to have reached the city?
It's a little bit tricky to catch up with all the news that we can get. But for the moment, the city is not yet entirely captured by the rebels. So there are still Congolese army soldiers, which are still in several parts, claiming several parts of the city. And so, like, military-wise, it's a very confusing situation. And if you look at the humanitarian situation, people are deprived of water. They don't have electricity. They are hiding at home. And so it's a very, very tough and very hard situation. We have got correspondents on the ground. So it's really, really difficult.
And now coming to you, what do you make of the latest development with the rebels reaching Goma? You know, Rwanda has been accused of supporting these M23 rebels for several reasons. One of them is that the M23 group is primarily composed of ethnic Tutsis, similar to Rwanda's ruling ethnic group. What more can you tell us about that?
I mean, the situation is quite very complicated. And again, even the premise of the question is a little bit very much reductionist and very much simplifying very complex issues. The leader of M23, of course, they talk about M23 now. Actually, those who captured the city nowadays style them under AFC, Alliance of the Flave Congo, under the leadership of Kone Nangaa. And of course, yes, there has been quite a lot of reports talking about Rwanda's involvement behind the M23 AFC movement. That being said, of course, them capturing Goma or being on the verge of capturing it, the latest images show them at the airport and so on. Of course, it's a dramatic situation, which, as many commentators have showed, recalls the events of 2012, among many others, but also other cycles before. It's an escalation of a very complex issue with many years of conflicts and layers of conflicts in which the civilian population, of course, continues to suffer.
But did you foresee such a day and a return to the city after the rebels withdrew years ago?
It's not unexpected. Nobody predicts the future, but definitely for many of us who have been analyzing and writing about the conflicts in the DRC, in Eastern Congo generally, it's not a surprise in the sense that we know that there have been many kind of episodes of violence and many arguments which have not been followed up. a lot of unresolved issues, which are both local but also regional, make it that it's not always surprising when you see a new flare of violence or armed hostilities in that part of the country.
Right. And just coming back to you, Jonas, there have been reports of also people fleeing. What can you report about this worsening situation? There are also clips even of South African troops flagging the white flag yesterday. Just for our listeners to, you know, have an understanding of exactly what is happening at this hour.
The city is actually encircled. So you have the Rwandan border to the east, the Lake Kivu to the south, and west and north is the front line. This means that the population is actually trapped. So when the whole thing started, some of them, they managed to escape to Idvi Island. But during the whole fighting, some of them trying to go to the Rwandan side, to Gisenyi, but the problem is much more that they have actually no place to flee, like in large numbers.
So what about the troops themselves? What are they really doing for the civilians?
Yeah, the tricky thing is we have the MONUSCO, the UN troops, which are on the ground, but they are simply not prepared and they don't have the exact mandate to fight such an army, which is supported by Rwanda with 3,000 to 4,000 troops or maybe even more on the ground. So it's like a state-like army. So the UN is there to protect the civilians against small militias. So this is not really something where they can do much. The African, like Southern African troops, they have been fighting, but it's a question of whether they have the capacities and so on. And the Congolese part, I mean, they are still fighting, but they are facing like a very strong army.
And Felix, you know, United Nations and various international bodies have accused Rwanda as well of, you know, providing funding, training and equipment to these M23 rebels. There have been reports of Rwanda troops fighting also alongside M23. Do you think it's going to be really easy to resolve this crisis and keep these rebels away?
It's not easy, and nothing is easy about that conflict, of course. As I said earlier, this is a conflict that for many years already, for decades, I would rather say, has featured domestic issues and regional issues. Both security and social political issues. In the security sector, I mean, Rwanda has very many times invoked the fact that there are Rwandan rebels which have for the last 3 decades basically used Congolese territory in order to regroup and arm and now and then launch attacks on Rwanda. A lot of Rwandan officials many times have invoked the collaboration of Congolese authorities, the Congolese army, with the FDLR, with even announcements of the killing of the top commander of the FDLR during the recent fighting. So that's the regional issue. But also the regional issue, I always keep it in mind the fact that you don't have only conflicts in North Kivu. There are even issues in South Kivu, for example, which have brought to the involvement, for example, of Burundi fighting alongside the Congolese army. So that which is a different conflict in itself, what is happening in the whole plateau of South Kivu. But Burundian forces have been active alongside the Congolese army or as well around Goma. So there are already clearly foreign interests and foreign which draw interventions in that conflict. And of course, there are issues which are very much domestic about how Congo mobilizes its own population, but also who is considered Congolese and who is not, which has featured in this conflict, not only in this, but also in previous episodes of violence.
And the reports also, I mean, people are saying that Rwanda has significant political, security and economic interests in the Eastern DRC. We're talking of rich in minerals. This is a place that is rich in minerals. And Rwanda itself also benefits from the trade, especially in gold. Additionally, Rwanda views the presence of Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, FDLR, are a Hutu militia group in the DRC as a direct threat to its security. So many would just wonder why the several deals that have been put in place to tackle this conflict have not actually come to fruition. Nothing has happened. And where do you think these parties went wrong to revive this? I mean, maybe to revise this crisis to this level now. Is it Rwanda that needs to really be spoken to say, okay, what exactly do you want to stop this?
I mean, as someone who has engaged with the debt, many people talk about those agreements, but they don't even kind of want to go into the details of what is in those kind of agreements. If you go on peacemaker.org, I guess, which is a UN space where you have a lot of different peace agreements from different parts of the world, I think you have a dozen, the last time I referenced them, I think it was something around 14 different agreements in the last couple of years that have been made about the DRC, most of them about conflicts, different conflicts in Eastern DRC, with very specific issues that the parties agreed to that needs to be resolved. Now, if you look at a lot of literature on the Congo, you tend to have really quite a very short memory in terms of what issues of any given specific conflict people talk about and want to address. Even now, if I listen to a lot of the comments that I hear, there is that short memory which is very much present. There are issues which are very domestic, which are about the treatment of, let's say, the Tutsi and the Banyarwanda in general in northern Kivu, whether they are fully Congolese or not. There are issues, of course, of equal access to opportunities and to governance structures and so on, which predate the current conflicts. Those were already existing since the 80s, and a lot has been written on that. And those always, a few times, have been mobilized in this conflict. Now, to that, of course, added the transboundary elements of the conflict in the neighboring countries, Rwanda and Burundi, where you have rebels fighting governments in those countries, which are based in the DRC. And even you have the Uganda element to the AF, the terrorist or the group that is operating in North Kivu and Ituri, which has drawn, of course, even now, the Ugandan involvement. But now for the conflict in North Kivu, really, one cannot imagine the problem ending without solving both those internal problems, which are purely internal, but which connect with external ones, with those rebel groups operating on Congolese soil, whether they are Rwandans, of course, which have been an issue for many years, or even Burundians, which are an issue in the less talked about problem in South Kivu.
I understand that you're saying we are sort of like forgetting history here. But however, you know, it's more like DRC blaming Rwanda, Rwanda blaming DRC. And for some of us who don't come from these countries or from this region and understand really what is going on, you know, Rwanda keeps being blamed for the activities of the rebels. But Rwanda also claims its involvement is defensive, aimed at protecting itself from the FDLR. So what is it that lame people like us that are not really understanding this whole issue, what are we supposed to believe?
I guess the problem is not who is wrong. It's more about how complex these things are and how they need to be addressed in their complexity. There is a long history behind that. And I don't have, I guess, space to go into all of that. There is a lot of books that have been written on that. I always like to recommend already a book from 2010 by Severino Tesere about the troubles in Congo. You get an idea about things that have not been fixed today, which can inform what is happening today. So much of the peace building that has been happening in Congo tends always, as I was saying earlier, to be blind to these historical factors and unresolved issues from both sides that have not been addressed. And that fuel always a recurrence of the conflicts, which is expected in people who study conflicts. The fact of the matter is that when the genocide ended in Rwanda, a lot of people poured in from the defeated side, poured into the Congo and have regrouped and reorganized in many different shapes and forms over the last 30 years. And a few times managed to attack Rwanda, a few times it defeated, a few times there were interventions from Rwanda, including with agreement with Congolese authorities, and a few times there were radical kind of opposition to such moves, as was the case in recent years when there was a talk of deploying an East African force. Now, those are issues, for example, from the Rwanda side, but of course, because of that fact that Congolese territory has always been used now and then by different armed groups, without the authorities there being able to contain that, of course, Rwanda has always used as well a few different mechanisms to look for its own security, including through different interventions that have been recorded over the time. Now, it's not really a matter of which narrative. The issue is really, what are the issues and how can they be resolved once and for all to avoid this being just another episode of another, whereby we might end up again seeing M23 pulling out of some accord, and then a few years later we have a similar kind of episode. I guess the best way to address this really is to look at those domestic issues I was talking about, but also transboundary issues, including foreign armed groups that operate in those countries, in order to resolve things once and for all. And if only anything, that would remove all of the so-called excuses that are used by interveners.
Yeah, I mean, that is obviously the biggest question, because besides all this, we are losing lives, you know.
Absolutely.
That's the biggest question. Then if Rwanda, we can't say they are to blame, Congo, they are not to blame, there's just history surrounding all this, then what needs to be done to resolve this crisis?
I don't know many countries on planet Earth that are comfortable having foreign armed groups operating on their soil. I don't. And be safe, or expect to be safe. You don't need in Congo to have Rwandan or Burundian or Ugandan rebels. I mean, remember what was said about Kony 2012. I remember it was again about Kony being on Congolese soil. So Congo will never be at peace, I believe, unless there is governance structures that are able to protect all population, to ensure equality of the population, to then remove foreign threats that are on domestic soil, and to keep its borders so that nobody can enter or come there. And of course, the Congolese political class has not really been brilliant in at least strengthening its own game. There are more infights and corruption and many other of the likes than really building a cohesive system that caters to all of those issues and then really looks at the keeping the border safe.
But I would like to add the role of the international community, because when we look at the rebellion in 2012 and 2013, there was a huge international protest. And finally, countries such as the UK, they finally stopped development aid funding. Barack Obama even intervened and called Kagame. So this helped to make the rebels leave the city of Goma. And at the same time, there were like parallel negotiations going on between Kinshasa and the actual rebel group. And today, Kinshasa is always refusing to negotiate with the rebels directly. They just want to negotiate with Rwanda. And I'm not sure whether they can stay on this position for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And now, as you just mentioned, now the international community, the latest development would obviously worsen the humanitarian situation. Then how should the DRC's government and army, as well as the regional bloc and international community, respond in this instance? Maybe you can answer that as well, Jonas.
Yeah, so the first thing is what I already said about the international reaction. So, for example, the European Union, we are hearing that they are just about to discuss whether there might be a new round of sanctions, for example. So it's really important on an international level to put pressure on Rwanda to say that they are violating international law. There's no doubt about this. You cannot send foreign troops in another country to for whatever reason. And so this is something that needs to be done at the moment. I mean, that's what I would say concerning the international community, yes.
Yeah, but we want to also focus on the people fleeing. Have you seen any assistance from the international community trying to assist them, trying to render any help for those that are fleeing?
For the moment, there are not so many fleeing because they're pretty much trapped. So there are some of them on Idjwi Island and some of them went to Gisenyi, but these are rather like the more privileged people who went there. And so the majority of the people, they are trapped in Goma. So the big question is, if fighting will go on for a longer period, how can those people be assisted? So it's a city where there's fighting going on. So and the electricity lines are down, and usually people go to the lake to fetch water. And so there needs to be some kind of humanitarian corridor to bring these basic goods to them. But how do you do this in a moment of severe fighting? Okay. So this is a tough question at the moment.
Right, right. And in Kinshasa now, what is the government saying about these emerging developments?
The government has always been protesting against the involvement of Rwanda, not just now. And they were always wondering why this wasn't really heard on an international level, because this rebellion started in 2021 and it's just now like another form of escalation. And they have just stepped up the tone. So, for example, the Minister of Foreign Affairs, she was in in front of the United Nations Security Council, where she was saying that this reminds her of the worst days of Congolese war history, the 1990s. So they are really putting much pressure on the international community to finally react.
And is the army making any efforts to take control again?
The problem is that the army can't move in. So the army is like trapped with the civilians in the spot. So the remaining battalions, they are fighting. Some surrendered, some are fighting together with like local militias. So it's a very confusing image. And the problem is that this might have collateral damages. Mm-hmm. And that's the huge risk that right now.
And Felix, what are your fears for the coming days as this crisis continues to escalate?
Of course, the first fear is why my colleague just ended, is keep in mind that Goma had not been censuses in Congo since the 80s, but Goma is a city with an estimated 1.5 million population. So as he was rightly saying, much of the population is still in Goma, hiding in the houses, staying home, because they have no other choice except those who fled. The first really is for the security and safety of the civilian population if the fight goes on for longer than it has already and with more casualties possibly. That's something that, so all interventions probably should really be geared towards ensuring that fighting stops.
Right, as we wrap up, just from both of you, what assistance you think this region really needs right now from organizations like ECOWAS, Africa Union, SADC? We can start with you, Felix, as we wrap up.
To me, really, it's any intervener should try not to make things worse. And not try to make things worse can only happen if people look at the comprehensiveness of issues and intervene to address all of those issues, historical, current, and past, and really look at all sides of issues, social, political, economic, rather than really picking one single issue, because those have been tried and have never succeeded in resolving the conflict in the long run.
And Jonas, as we wrap up, your opinion?
Like African context, I think it's the first step that now there's like a huge attention of it, because like if you talk to people in the DRC, they don't feel their voices heard. And they were always wondering why we have seen this rebellion, but why there wasn't any like strong reaction. And so I would rather, as hard and as difficult the situation is, there's also a chance now that like those governments will unite and will try to find a solution.
Dr. Felix Ndahinda, Great Lakes researcher based in Netherlands, and Jonas Gedding, a DW freelance journalist based in Kinshasa. Many thanks for joining us.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. Meanwhile, the fighting in DR Congo has other implications for the sub-region. Already, 4 more South African soldiers have been killed in fighting with the M23 rebels. The South African government said that takes the number of South African peacekeepers killed to 13 since the conflict escalated last week. Some South Africans have been reacting to this development.
I feel so sad because he told us soon he'll be coming back home. And it's so sad that he has a daughter and she's so young. She will no longer see her father. I can't even cope. I'm struggling to eat. I feel so sad. I still can't believe he's no more. He'll return home in a coffin.
I think sending the soldiers there would prove to DRC that South Africa is engaged and committing to a strong relationship and building a strong foundation between the country. On the downside, of course, we wouldn't want our people to die, of course. So I think maybe, I don't know what would be the solution, but I mean, if there are many soldiers, I mean, they can send them there, yeah. I mean, when you're a soldier, you know that there's going to be war, so there's a chance you're going to die. So I think you sign up for it, you know what's going to happen, yeah.
We have to deploy the best capacity we have. And if we don't have let's confess we don't have it and withdraw. We may have the interest to defend, but we may not have the capacity. But children are going to die. Somebody's children are going to die. Not only these ones. People are playing jokes with the lives of our brothers, and we must not allow that. If they can't give them equipment, let them come back. The death before this one, the soldiers were telling me that there were actually two military helicopters in their base, but there is no pilot to fly those helicopters. The first and the last time they flew there, that's when they were taking them there. You've got some bit of air power, but you don't use it because there is just no capacity.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Remember to follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Kelechi. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, Made for Minds.